But I'm really honored to have you on Unraveling Religion today, Vicki.
Sure. Well, actually, maybe I want to start by saying there's so much in the nature that is very spiritually oriented and reminders of things that are of the spirit, you know.
Yeah.
And I've just spent a lot of time with indigenous people very recently, and they say it's not a religion, there's our life ways. And I feel like any of our religions, if they're not life ways, what are they? So anyway.
Well, what you say is true, because as we become disconnected from nature itself, we have to create meaning and revitalization through belief constructs, which become religion. In our cities and in our populace, like, we become disconnected. We've lost touch with that essential connection with our environment that is rejuvenative and restorative. Yeah.
Absolutely. It's making me think of Dostoevsky said, beauty will save the world. The other thing is that the connectedness and something bigger than ourselves thing that people talk about, that is something about religion, something about even about collaborating, working together as part of something bigger than ourselves. So, you know, well, nature is definitely something bigger than ourselves, the creation. So it makes meaning for people.
That's so well put. And there's like an ease in sharing in nature that you observe, that it teaches us as human beings, just the need to do that, to share. Yeah.
Yes. So much so. So I would say, in terms of my spiritual path, well, first, I guess I might start with that I'm a social worker and I'm a seeker, and I have a dog, as you can hear. But I've always felt, you know, that the spirit, you know, is so important, that religion, that connectedness, that very heart to heart, spirit to spirit. So when I said I'm a social worker, well, my older sister was paraplegic, and I had a younger sister and brother, have a younger sister and brother, although our older sister has passed away. And our parents, our mom was a WASP, white Anglo-Saxon Protestant, and our dad was a German Jew. And I always felt very, very sure that, you know, all paths lead to the same goal, to the extent that when I read a book about Sri Ramakrishna when I was 12, and he was, you know, taught that all paths lead to the same goal. And I thought, well, everybody knows that, right? And I've come to find out that not everybody knows that. Just because A is true doesn't mean B is not true, right? And that actually, of course, I think that the truth and the enormity of the truth, or even I like to call it the noumena, the great mystery, is bigger than any of them, right? So we can't narrow it down into anything, or the idea of God, that we can't narrow God or the spirit or any of that into some small circumscribed thing, as if we knew, as if we understood.
Right.
No. I did spend a lot of time, well, I read about Sri Ramakrishna as a 12-year-old, but I didn't really connect with the Ramakrishna Mutt and Mission until I was a grad school student in Boston in my late 20s.
Uh-huh.
And I stumbled across that there was a monk from the Ramakrishna Mutt and Mission was speaking somewhere about Vedanta and Islam.
Uh-huh.
And I went so excited. I thought, oh, he must have, you know, flown in or something like that. Well, he lived there, and there was a center there, and I started going, and I was very seriously devoted for many years there. Even Swami Vivekananda said, it's good to be born in a church, but it's bad to die there.
Oh.
But so, you know, my spiritual journey has continued on. But the one thing I'd say about what you said is that, you know, they talk in Hinduism about dualism and non-dualism. Mm-hmm. So, or maybe in other religions too, but the dualism being, you know, there's God and then the creation, and the non-dualism is what you were talking about, that it's all one thing.
Yeah.
No, it's all one whole thing. And of course, that is where I've come to definitely be, you know, myself.
But what brought you to this place? Tell me a little bit about your journey. Tell me a little bit about yourself, Vicki.
Well, so I started off with, you know, the being the middle child in a family where there was definitely trauma on both sides from my parents, both. But my dad, especially as a German Jew, as a 15-year-old, as a very radical 15-year-old in 1933 in Munich, he was told that he had better leave or they would be taking care of him. Because he refused to say Heil Hitler when he went up to get his prize at his, when, you know, at, on his sports day, things like that. Beat up the leader of Hitler Youth, different things like that. So he had had some real trauma. And other, you know, there were some family issues too. And then for our mom, also the same thing, including a lot of survivor guilt. In her particular family, both she had lost two out of her five siblings. I mean, three of them continued on. Two had passed, and one was her younger sister. And she, and there's always that, or certainly for her, I think there was a lot of survivor guilt.
Yeah.
And also for a parent who her mother was the one survivor of four children. Yeah. So all the rest of the children and the dad had all died. The kids had died of diphtheria, I think. And the father had died. So there was just the mother and the surviving, my grandmother. Mm-hmm. Just the trauma and the extreme mourning that she always had, and depression that my grandmother's mother always had. So anyway, so there's all of that. And then my sister being in a wheelchair, you know, being a paraplegic or technically a quadriplegic. And then our mom was pretty overwhelmed with all the amount of work, especially because then there was the younger brother and sister. Sure. So to me, I grew up as a helper, yeah. You know, helping. I was helping my sister, my older sister, before I remember. And as far as the spirit and spiritual seeking, I think that's just always... it's always been part of it. I think, you know, well, first of all, a certain amount of sensitization to suffering.
Yeah.
That's to that. So between my parents, their relationship, their own, you know, things to deal with, our own thing to deal with as a family,
yes.
That our older sister couldn't walk.
Yeah.
So those things just brought me to that seeking and that, you know, helping,
yeah.
Seeking and helping to seek. And it's interesting because you want to talk about spirituality and activism.
Yes.
And I want to say they, to me, are just so much part and parcel.
Yes.
Because it is the love that makes people an activist.
Yeah.
Usually because you care that people are suffering.
Yes.
You want to see them have a relief.
Mm-hmm.
You want to see the healing. You want to see, you know, things be better. You know, one of the reasons why I love Cornel West so much, because when he speaks in a very personal way,
mm-hmm.
about our very personal lives, our daily choices and things like that, but in plugged into both a very real phenomenon that is the history and the legacy of our experiences,
yeah.
You know, the various, you know, the analysis of what has happened,
yeah.
And how things are right now, coupled up with the spirit and what, you know, what that struggle is, you know, in our individual lives, in our collective lives, you know, how to deal with those needs. I'm not going to stop being an activist, or I'm not going to stop doing anything. I'm hoping to get my workaholism a little bit better. that one is that anybody should be eligible for parole after 15 years, just because that's such a distance of time from whatever you did. And then two, that what is only makes sense, you have to stop being locked into the nature of the crime as the deciding factor, because people change, and people change radically.
I know in like other countries, the model of rehabilitation in the prison system is much more progressive and much more pronounced than it is in America. Could you speak to that a little bit? Like in Germany, let's say in Germany, sure. Like the means of like wanting to rehabilitate, literally to foster and grow the character and spirit of people, preparing them to come out. Like,
absolutely. Absolutely, we do. I mean, we have our criminal justice system is a criminal system.
Yeah.
It's racially oriented.
Yeah.
It was started right off as sort of a substitute 13th Amendment. Specifically said, well, there'll be no slavery except, if people are incarcerated for some kind of a crime. And then there were all kinds of things that were made into crimes that weren't crimes, and all kinds of ways that people get charged and convicted when they didn't do anything or they didn't do that or whatever. So there's all of that going on. So the Germans, the way the Germans handled the war and their crimes against humanity would be a great model for the way that we have not dealt with all the things that are the criminal behaviors and things in our past. Of the United States, right? That was one thing. But I didn't even mention that today is the beginning of the kickoff week about reseal the deal for Iran, the Iran deal. Yeah. So we worked very hard to get that accomplished, and it was a very happy day when it was. Then it all went to, because we had a criminal in the White House, even more criminal than usual, yeah. I would say. Very, very, very criminal behavior coming out of the White House, which included just, dropping out of that very good deal that was not being transgressed. It was working very well, and just making a problem into it, putting a problem out there, creating a problem. So we're hoping that that President Biden will just go back into the Iran deal as it was originally agreed to and just become part of that whole group, to rejoin the group, rejoin the agreement, and just not have to, push for something more. And another thing, when I mention that, I can't help mentioning about Yemen and all the way Yemen is suffering, the way now President Biden said that he's not going to enable that war anymore, but we haven't seen any real changes. And in Iran, they have not seen any real changes. So we won't enable that war, but we'll still help supply Saudi Arabia with their military wish list, et cetera, and for their supposed defense needs or something. So the people in Yemen are suffering tremendously.
Yes.
And war, I want to say, especially the way it is waged now, it is criminal. It is a war crime. I mean, the laws, first of all, there was a law passed against war anyway in the Kellogg's-Briand Act. Was in 1927 and 28 outlawed war, and then if you look at the rules and regs for war making, that there, you cannot. There's proportionality. There's all these things that you can't do that are regularly done in wars.
Yeah. Yeah.
And sanctions, by the way, I've also seen that sanctions are not a good, they're not a good substitute for war. It just means once again, that the people to suffer are the people.
Yep.
So Anyway, so for Yemen, for Iran, for so many countries where we think we know what they need to do, you know, our foreign policy is very wrong. And I can't help mentioning our foreign policy in terms of the nuclear weapons, where we are the biggest bully on the block by far. Yeah. And we're part of the Back from the Brink campaign, which has five different demands, and one of them being that there should be no first nuclear strike, that you know, it can't be a one person decision. I can't remember what the other three things are, but basically, I mean, we need to restart the disarmament process. We cannot afford the loaded gun to our head and to everyone else's head.
Well, it beckons to bring it back into the spiritual realm and spirituality, mm-hmm. and the evolution of humankind and of people. I'm just wondering, Vicky, if you could speak about how this activism and the merging of sort of your spiritual path, like, could you talk a little bit more about that, how those two interact?
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. Well, so I just started, what I say is, they're totally intersected to me, but they weren't always in that kind of way. So I told you a little bit about how I'm a seeker, a social worker. I want to help. Yep. And my dad was all about justice. I think I sort of said that about, he was, you know, with his adamancy, you know, about, you know, stopping the Nazis and et cetera. And our mom was, she applied for school as a 14-year-old. She applied for, when she went to college, that she wanted to go to Swarthmore, which was the Quaker college, which is known for their peacemaking. Yeah. And she was always one who, if people were fighting, she would just agree with whoever she was with, pretty much. So the peacemaking, the conflict resolution, the not wanting any conflicts going on, that was very much our mother. So the peace and justice sort of go hand in hand. But I was not politically active. I was, you know, I wanted to be a social worker as a teenager. Then I ended up wanting to, I could give you, I didn't get into the weeds a little bit, but I just say overall, I did a bunch of things. I mean, you know, I dropped out of school. I went back and forth to school a number of times. Yeah. Now I do have a doctorate degree, but it was an honorary. But I got a couple of master's degrees, but the first one was in international economic development.
Oh.
Because I wanted to save babies, right?
Yep.
Yeah, so go do project work. My dream job was in Peshawar, Pakistan, in the refugee camp and everything. I didn't get that job. So I ended up, meanwhile, I had already reconnected to the Vedanta, or connected to the Vedanta, right? I ended up working in banking and being a very serious devotee. Right? We're leading a really cloistered life. I sort of describe myself as a freelance nun in that period of my life, where I was working in banking, though, while I was doing it. It was like a double life. It was like very weird when people would, you know, we'd have these, I was in some kind of a group with my guru and other devotees. And then when we go around, like, introducing yourself, and yes, I work in a bank, you know. So it would be very surprising, but so still the political activism was not there. But my younger sister was a political activist. I would even say our older sister, who passed away during that period, was a political activist in a lot of ways, and especially as a person with a handicap. She would call the police when people would park in a handicapped spot. That was one of the things. But, you know, she was in a sort of a low-key and very pragmatic way. She was kind of an activist, and certainly our younger sister really was.
Uh-huh.
So, and then after our older sister had passed away, you know, she'd start talking politics to me, and I'd say, you know, Fritzy, I really have to get off the phone because I couldn't stand it. Well, why? because I knew if I really let it in my brain, I would never have any peace from it. So
this is the great thing, that the thing we deny the most is really like the path that we're trying to steer away from is really a deep calling. Yeah.
Right. So then it happened, and it happened right after it was the anniversary of 9/11, when I saw what they were doing to turn it into a big excuse for going to war and all kinds of other nefarious, intentions and, greedy,
selfish motivations. Yeah. Yes.
Right. So that was when it went from 0 to 100.
Yeah.
So I was ready to go to Iraq as a human shield, except then I thought I was a little too suspicious, because I thought it really would, that I was actually feeling, I was just imagining that George Bush would get, charter a plane to pile all the activists onto the plane, let them all go, just to shut us up or something.
Yeah.
Wow. So I decided to stay here and really, except for I was working as a social worker doing, therapy. I was a mobile therapist, so I was working with kids and families. But when I wasn't doing that then I was very busy working in northeastern Pennsylvania, where I lived at the time. Just wherever and whenever, there was any opportunity for activism.
Yeah. Now, Vicki, go ahead.
I was just saying, especially anti-war at that point.
Yeah. Well, I just want to say we have some shared connections. My father also was Jewish. My mother was Irish Catholic.
Uh-huh.
And I think through the years she was into yoga and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But it taught me about the validity of all the world's traditions, as we were speaking about earlier, the validity of all the world's traditions. And in my own journey, I spent some time in Nepal. And I know that in our connections, you've also spent some time in that area, in that region, yeah?
Oh, just under 2 weeks, but I loved it. Oh, Nepal. And did you get to do some trekking? I imagine you did.
I did a little bit. We were in I was on an NGO, Tevel Betzedek, which is an Israeli NGO. And we were in a remote mountain village. So we just
really?
From village to village. The village name was Lamatol, because there was a Buddhist temple above, and the farmers were lamas. Many of them, like the Dalai Lama, many of the farmers were lamas. And so just walking around there, going from town to town, and the beauty of the place. But like, it really, I went there because I had a heartbreak, like a heartache, and I had to get out of the States and not my conventional way of seeing things. And the mountains really healed me. The mountains it settled something in me very profound in it. And I was only there for 2 months, but it really was something that was very necessary for me at the time,
So, absolutely.
Yeah.
But, wonderful.
Yeah. And so in your work with the water protectors and going back to the sort of what we were talking about in the beginning of the show, themes of nature and the restorative teachings of nature in Native peoples. Have you done a lot of work with Native peoples?
I would, it's all relative. I'd say, a lot more than many and not as much as some. I've been very blessed that since I moved here to Buffalo, it's 2007, I've had an virtually adjoining office with Agnes Williams Seneca. Mm. She was Seneca. Her dad was chief, actually, during the whole Kinswood Dam thing. And she's a social worker, too, by the way. Which I didn't say, I went back to school for social work when I wanted, and, that's how I ended up. So that's how I ended up doing this work and how it's all so connected. So the social work with the spirit and everything else. So anyway, Agnes as a social worker, as a person who was very involved with the American Indian movement at you know, at the time, you know, at a very significant time. And this is another very significant time. Yeah. So that's how, and over the years, you know, I've just worked with her a lot and I've learned from her a lot, a huge amount. And it's just been my great pleasure and learning journey. Now, I do like to think that our mother, on our mother's side, because our mother had, she had somebody who came over on the Mayflower, was the Howland, who was the guy who fell in and had to be, he fell into the ocean and he did get fished back out. And he did lead to be a very prolific life, I guess, because I've met people who are also at least two people I know who are not clearly related to me, who are probably very distantly related to me from him.
Yeah, yeah.
But my mother also on her family was her grandmother had come over herself, uh-huh. You know, had been a first generation, I should say. Her dad came over. I don't know whether she was born here or there. But anyway, but some of my mom's family was here for a very long time. So I might have some indigenous blood, but I don't know that. But I do know that the wisdom of being connected to the creation of respect of the ways of the peacemaker, yeah. You know, which are especially the Iroquois, as they call it, or the Haudenosaunee, which is what the Haudenosaunee call it and what we call it, you know, had tremendous knowledge and wisdom and just wonderful life ways, wonderful sustainable life ways. And now with everything that's going on, we so need to respect that, to learn from it and to emulate that.
I could not agree more. I mean, I think that really just like this, the quality that seems to be lacking in our culture is like the ability of like attentive listening, of like not putting forth what you think, what you want, and what you believe, but really a receptivity to like those around us. What are we needing? What are we wanting? How might we share things? You know what I mean? I think that it feels like an element that's really lacking. And I know I've had some Native friends, and they've instructed and taught me so much about that. And I know that generally in spirituality, they're very different than maybe like other ways of expressing spirituality, because they don't really talk about it so much, right?
Right. Well, they don't. What they do and they don't. So, in a way, it's back to by, you know, it's not so much of teaching or preaching, but it is. There's a depth. There's the Gnono. You know, which in a lot of cultures now, I think of a Catholic man I knew who once said to me, you know, gratitude is the attitude, or something like, you know, like the thankfulness is the antidote, yeah, to our ills, no matter what they are. And that is very much in the indigenous, or at least, and especially Haudenosaunee ways, is that they, you know, at the beginning of the day, that's what you started off with, the thankfulness, the Gnono. And then for any event, it starts with the Gnono, with the thankfulness for all the, and it goes through all the different elements, you know, of the creation and all the different elements that you're thankful for, and including the people, right? Yeah. And starting with the people, but then going to the earth and then going up through the grasses and the trees and the different flying and swimming and winged, you know, different creatures. So, and of course, I just came back from Minnesota, yeah, in line three. So for those who have seen, you know, some of the radio shows that we've done and broadcasts that we've done from Think Twice Radio, and then also on our YouTube, there are a bunch of videos that we took. There's one great one with Winona LaDuke speaking at length And the only thing is the sound that you can hear it, but I am embarrassed that my active listening is like way too loud. And if I could do that, we live and learn, you know, I'll do a better job next time. But anyway,
I wanted to just switch topics for a second, Vicky. Sure. I'm curious, like, so in this spirituality and activism, someone just maybe beginning on the path, let's say I was interested in becoming more of an activist, what books would you recommend? What people would you recommend I talk to? What books do you recommend I read? What things do you recommend I would do?
Well, one of the things I'd say is, I do think Cornel West is a good place to start. You know, I think just listening to him, the way, you know, he sort of boiled it down to moral integrity and universal solidarity will get where you need to go. So when you start off with that, that's a great way. But, you know, and he, you know, certainly he actually, as a Black man, as a Christian, you know, very, devout Christian, devoted to Christianity, but he has that universality of spirit. So he doesn't miss anything there. And he talks certainly a lot about Black people and their situation, but he's also said, you know, I didn't know what poverty was till I saw how Indigenous people were living. Right. And so in line with, I want to also say, of course, you know, Dr. King, uh-huh. You know, and I mean, Black people in this country have suffered and have taught so much. So from Dr. King and Malcolm X, who by the end, you know, were both really very much in the same place. Yeah. And so many of the Panthers, I know I was talking with a Panther and they said, we're going through this whole violence, not violence thing. Right. Which I mean, we could talk plenty about that too. So strict nonviolence isn't even possible, first of all. You know, so I think about a movie about the Dalai Lama when he wanted them to construct something, and they're digging with like a little spoon. Why? Because they don't want to kill. They want to be sure they're not killing one of the insects in the ground. So there's a certain amount of it's just not feasible. You know, total supreme nonviolence. But anyway, so I asked this Panther about nonviolence, or something like that. And he said, well, you know, a little crazy glue in a police lock can do a world of good. And so it all depends on what we mean by violence and also what's going on at the time. Where Dietrich Bonhoeffer, who, of course, you probably know, you know, a Lutheran priest who, yeah, as many people would know, he was in on this plot to kill Hitler, which didn't succeed, but he was killed. But he said that violence is a sin that people take on for the good of others, to spare others. You know, but I also believe that the ends dictate the means. So it's really something to sort of figure out as we go. Yeah. But I think reading some of all that, the Howard Zinn is wonderful. But so is Vandana Shiva, who is a physicist and who is a shero of mine, you know, who is very geared to, you know, the spirit, but also to, you know, that healthy, healthful biodiversity that comes from back to Indigenous wisdom. Mm-hmm. So Vandana Shiva has written lots of great things. And I really feel like, you know, it's also what moves you. So for me, one of the things that moves me is this Unite the Struggles, because I feel like that same truth and love is the way I look at it. And that's Dr. King. Yeah. Unarmed truth and unconditional love will have the final word in reality. That's what he said. Yeah. So though, to me, that unarmed truth and unconditional love gets us all the way there,
yeah.
You know, along with, I mean, communicating and cooperating to sort of tease out how to sort of, how to, you know, how to do things in a way that will work, or how to get from here to there. But those principles, and I'm always talking about principles in the spirit,
yep.
That the principles in the spirit have to guide us in that way.
Yes.
Those things, if we are true to those things will help us tease out how to figure out the practical difficulties that we have in making this world, you know, better for everyone.
Yep, so much so. And just wrapping up, are there some final projects that you want to promote, or things that you want to promote, or things that you want to bring into light or awareness?
Well, I'm glad you brought up about our Indigenous friends and everything that's going on there, because I know that depending people who are watching this right now, which I'm guessing, or listening to it right now, on April 1st, we have an event at Niagara Square that's about the runners, that Indigenous runners that are going from DAPL and you know, the Midwest, and coming and running to DC to petition President Biden for stopping all the pipelines,
yeah.
Including DAPL and including Line 3. And we have our own NAPL that just got a new lease on life, I'm sorry to say. So we want to stop that. But I also think, you know, so many things, I mean, come the Western New York Peace Center, we're very much oriented to that because it was started as part of Dr. King's Clergy and Laity Concerned. So it started as an anti-war group, and it definitely is in there. But we also have 9 different task forces. And the biggest thing we do is about uniting the struggles, is about the Women's March or the Poor People's Campaign or the various times and ways that we really bring all of that together. I know there's going to be some kind of an event like that in the fall that'll be a national thing that we're connected to. Rising Together is called. Oh. So there are a lot, but in the meanwhile, there are so many ways, and we love to share our events. We have a really great event calendar, so it shares our events as well as other allies and groups, you know, important things that people might do or campaigns that people might support. And we're just keeping our practice, trying to be the change, right?
Yep.
Really sometimes as simple as that too.
So Vicki, I just want to thank you for this time. It's flown by an hour. It's been a true honor to meet you and to speak with you and share this time with you. Thank you so much.
Joel, it's so wonderful to be with you. I thank you and Richard so much. It's been an honor. And next time I'll be interviewing you.
That's great. And I want to say, just leave it open.
Sure.
Maybe we'll do a part two of this because there was so much that was left untouched.
Oh, sure. And I want to see it on the map where you were in Nepal. That's one.
Definitely.
Well, thank you so much.
All the best to you.
All the best to you.
Take care. Bye, Vicki.
Bye for now.
See you soon.